Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 2018, today's guest, NBC correspondent Jacob Soboroff, was one of 10 journalists who exposed the living conditions of 1,500 children who were being held at Casa Padre, a former Walmart in South Texas. These were children who were taken from their parents due to the Trump administration's family separation policy. 2 years later, Jacob Soboroff wrote a best-selling book about the policy called Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. The legendary filmmaker Errol Morris read the book and said he shared some of the same questions Jacob raised. So they teamed up to make a documentary, which is called Separated. At least 4,227 children were taken from their parents, and as many as 1,052 are still separated to this day. In the documentary, Commander Jonathan White, who led the reunification process, says there's nothing to stop Trump from restarting family separations when he returns to the White House because Congress has failed to pass legislation to make it illegal. Here is the trailer for the documentary Separated.
Separation from your parent is a profoundly traumatizing event. But systematic separation of children from parents, officially, it wasn't happening. But it was happening.
You should tell me how you got involved in all of this.
Define all this.
Their version of stopping people from coming into the country was taking children away from their parents so that people wouldn't come.
Our field staff started to notice very young kids, tender age, anyone below 5. That's kind of unusual, right?
What Zero Tolerance did was turn their helpers into their worst nightmare.
So if you thought the child was endangered, that's the only circumstance to which you would separate.
Can't imagine doing it otherwise.
The government thought that showing the world separations through the eyes of people like me, they would scare the out of people that were attempting to come from coming.
Is that the right strategy?
So if you're part of a family and you break the law, you will be incarcerated.
I've honestly never seen anything like that. There are about 1,500 kids in there.
You're a parent. Don't you have any empathy for what they go through?
We now know this was right from the get-go. Someone must have been planning this.
A federal judge says the government needs to reunite young immigrant children with their parents.
We had 14 days to reunify all of the children under 5.
Their assessment form in the system doesn't have that much information. What's your mom's name, Mom? Like every mom, their name is Mom.
Do I call this child abuse? Do I call it torture?
Separation was the purpose. Prosecution was the tool.
It's not over. 5 years later, we are still trying to reunite up to 1,000 children.
There is really nothing to stop them.
This is a new era.
It troubles me profoundly that it could happen again.
That is the trailer for the new documentary, Separated. Separated will have its broadcast premiere on MSNBC on December 7th. Joining us to talk about the new documentary is Jacob Soboroff, NBC News political and national correspondent, executive producer of the new documentary, and author of Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. Hi, Jacob. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hey, Rose. It's so good to be back with you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you, Jacob. Huge thanks to you and Errol and the entire team for making this incredible documentary. Of course, you made this before the election, and now that Trump is going back to the White House, so many people are wondering, is he going to do this again? And I was just watching a clip from Tom Homan, Trump's soon-to-be border czar, in September 2023 at CPAC. He said, quote, "Trump comes back, I come back. We fix this S-H-I-T. I'm sick and tired of hearing about the family separation. I'm still being sued. Come get me. I don't give an S-H-I-T. What are your sources telling you about what could happen under a second Trump term? Will family separation happen again?
Forget about my sources, Rose. Listen to what they're saying publicly. And, you know, if I learned anything during the family separation policy of the first Trump term, which, you know, to remind everybody, was called by Physicians for Human Rights torture, according to the UN definition. The American Academy of Pediatrics said it was government-sanctioned child abuse. And the Republican-appointed judge who stopped the policy said it was one of the most shameful chapters in the history of our country. What I learned during that chapter was that if the Trump folks say they're going to do something, they are going to do it. And they said they were going to separate thousands of children from their parents to hurt them. And they did exactly that. And, you know, I reported from the floor of the Republican convention as thousands of people held up signs saying mass deportations now. And mass deportation is family separation by another name. It doesn't mean that they're separating children away from their parents at the border, but it means that they're separating or intend to parents from their children in the interior of the country, whether it's in our homes, their homes, our schools, places of business, out on the streets. And so they said they were going to do it, and I have no reason not to believe that that's not only their intention, but their plan.
And as I said in the intro, we meet in the film Commander Jonathan White, who led the reunification process. And he says there's nothing to stop Trump from doing this again because Congress has failed to pass legislation making it illegal.
That's right. There was a consent decree, an agreement reached between the ACLU, who brought a lawsuit on behalf of the class of separated parents, and the Justice Department under the Biden administration that bans the practice of family separation over the course of the next 8 or so years. But there was nothing that stopped the Trump administration from going around what the judge says was the U.S. Constitution. And so the fear amongst advocates and people still inside the government who had to fight back against this policy, and certainly people out on the streets, immigration attorneys and other advocates who fight for the rights of folks who come to this country seeking a better life, is that, you know, there's nothing stopping a future Trump administration from attempting to get around this agreement that was reached over the lawsuit that stopped the policy.
It was very interesting to learn about what was involved in trying to reunify children with their parents. The people who spoke on camera just talked about the work they did. It was a 24/7 job to make these connections. But Jacob, to think that 1,052 children are still separated from their parents, I mean, you can't even imagine what is going through their minds at this point.
Yeah.
Why has it taken, why are 1,052 kids still separated?
And let me tell you, Rose, the number's even bigger than that. That's the number that we thought it was at the end of the production of the film. The Department of Homeland Security, subsequent to the movie coming out, has now said that there's as many as 1,360 children that were separated under this policy without confirmed reunifications. And the answer to your question is, I think it's a generous description of the policy, but it was so haphazardly implemented and deliberately cruel that they knew that they weren't keeping records that would allow them to put parents and children back together. They knew that the plan was to deport parents before they could be reunited with children. And the evidence in the film, by the way, which Errol Morris so masterfully sort of spells out, it's both a forensic examination of the policy and the bureaucracy, but really gets, I think, to the emotional truth of what this policy meant, not only for the families, but for really people around the world who experienced it. The whole purpose, as Adam Serwer so memorably coined in The Atlantic, was the cruelty. The cruelty was the point. Separation was the purpose. The prosecutions or the criminal cases were just a mechanism in order to effectuate that, as Jonathan White says in this film. And just 2 nights ago in Washington, D.C., I was with some of those career civil servants at a screening of the film in our nation's capital. And I think that they're as worried as anybody that the same sort of deliberate negligence, a deliberate ignoring of the red flags that many, many people raised as this policy was being developed and implemented about what it would do to children. When I say what it would do, I mean, in some cases, create permanent orphans intentionally. And they went forward with it anyway. I think they're all worried about what it means if they attempt to do something like this. And in fact, you know, the mass deportation plan is family separation on steroids. It's a supersized family separation plan that doesn't stop at 5,500 kids. It would be potentially millions of people who live with an undocumented family member in their household in the United States. And we're talking about potentially millions of U.S. citizen children being taken, parents being taken away from them.
Immigration has been one of Trump's top issues since he began his campaign. And you all interviewed Elaine Duke, acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Errol Morris asked her, why is immigration so central to Trump's campaign? She said there was a feeling from those that were involved with the campaign that this was a central issue for the base. So it's a winning issue. She said, yes. Can you talk more about that and what you've learned about how and why immigration is such a central issue for Trump's base?
You know, I think it's not just Trump's base. I think that certainly Trump's base is particularly inclined to listen to and believe and buy into the messaging around fear when it relates to immigrants. And obviously, these are messages that are really not based completely untethered from the reality of, you know, the data and the statistics. But what I think is important to understand is that the reason that Donald Trump was able to separate children from their parents with impunity, by the way, nobody's been held accountable, despite the fact that President Biden called it criminal and Merrick Garland said he couldn't imagine anything more shameful, is that what led us to the moment of family separations in 2017 and 2018 was decades of bipartisan, deterrence-based, punitive-based criminalization of immigrants as American immigration policy, criminalization of migration, criminalization of attempts to seek asylum. And, you know, when you go back and you look at Bill Clinton, you know, created the first wave of border walls under his administration, which led people to go take dangerous and deadly routes and die trying getting into the United States. They created literally a policy called prevention through deterrence. George W. Bush created the Department of Homeland Security in the wake of 9/11 and exponentially increased the size of the Border Patrol. Barack Obama deported more people than any president in the history of the United States, earning him the nickname Deporter in Chief. And so when Donald Trump wanted to create a family separation policy, his administration did, the infrastructure was there in order to treat migrants as criminals, to criminalize them, to point a finger at them and do ultimately, you know, what I think will be remembered amongst some of the most nefarious, infamous moments in American history. And that infrastructure still exists today. Immigrants are talked about in American politics, even on the left, the so-called left today. Vice President Harris touted this bipartisan immigration border bill when she was running for president. It was one of the most conservative pieces of immigration-related legislation in a generation. And so, as my colleague Alex Wagner said to me the other night on MSNBC, the Overton window has shifted so far to the right in how America talks about migrants, as data points on a chart, as a political problem to be solved. Donald Trump is just exploiting that decades-long history, and his base buys into it more so than everybody else. But this is a framework that was created by both parties in the United States, and until that framework is broken, there very well may be more policies like family separation in the United States.
To your point, I just looked up the numbers. According to ABC, between 2009 and 2015, the Obama administration removed more than 2.5 million people through immigration orders. And in the film Separated, Jacob, you talk about how President Biden kept some of Trump's policies in place because of the high numbers. And you said, I don't see the same outrage. I don't see people in the streets reminding Joe Biden that he said it was criminal and that there'd be a thorough investigation.
Yeah, people, sadly, from my perspective, want to know less today about what's going on with our immigration system than they did during family separation. I think family separation gave everybody sort of X-ray vision into the American immigration system and the American immigration apparatus, that it's based in punishment, it's based in deterrence, and the people that get caught up in it are not, you know, quote unquote, violent criminals, or like Donald Trump said, rapists and murderers, while surely people who committed violent offenses, you know, do go through the immigration justice system and the American justice system as they should. But thousands, if not millions of people who have come here simply in search of a better life and to who have declared their legal right to asylum. And so when Joe Biden kept in place Title 42, the public health order, the so-called public health order that kept literally millions of undocumented people from being able to access the legal asylum system in the United States, when he decided to fight financial restitution in the courts for the same separated families that he had during the campaign, sort of campaigned around lifting up and making whole after this trauma of the family separation policy, I don't think, you know, objectively, they did what they said they were going to do, which was create a fair, safe, orderly, humane immigration system under the Biden administration. They leaned into the other direction. The same punitive-based, deterrence-based immigration policies of his predecessor and his predecessor and his predecessor and so on.
In the film, you interviewed Lee, is it Gellert?
Gellert, exactly.
Gellert with the ACLU, the lawyer who was constantly on television talking about family separation. In the film, he says he's been doing this work for 3 decades. This is the worst thing he's ever seen in the immigration context. It was so interesting, Jacob, to learn about what happened behind the scenes. He said people were constantly telling him to use the words child abuse and torture.
That's right.
And ultimately, he decided that the country was just too polarized and that would produce backlash. So he said, we've got to just tell the story and let the facts speak for themselves. What did you learn about what he told you about the internal investigation report from the HHS that said children were being separated much earlier than when people thought?
That the Trump administration was doing this from the get-go. The minute they came into office, and Errol spells this out so beautifully in the film and in such amazing detail, that the second the Trump administration came into office, they were already executing parts of this plan by putting people in place in order, even at low levels, within agencies like the Border Patrol sector in El Paso, not on a national level, to pilot this. So there was a pilot program in El Paso that actually Lomi Creel, the reporter at the time for the Houston Chronicle, had uncovered, where they were doing this before it was even a national policy signed into existence by Kirstjen Nielsen. And there were as many as 1,000 children separated before she ever put pen to paper to make this official policy. And so while the government, particularly people like John Kelly, who was the first Secretary of Homeland Security in the Trump administration, later, of course, the Chief of Staff, testifying before Congress that reports of family separation, while they were considering it, they would back down, they were going through with this the entire time that the Trump administration was saying to the public, No, we've decided we're not gonna do this, which is, by the way, I think, Rose, why uniquely this became the most significant, if not the only, major policy reversal of the first Trump term. When it came to light what they were doing in secret, when they said they weren't gonna be doing it, and that they had been doing it for so long, it wasn't a bipartisan outrage. It was actually more of a universal outrage where people literally took to the streets all over the world. It was the part of the film when I saw it for the first time that was most shocking to me. I had forgotten what it was like when people, not only all over the country and in cities around the world, but people like the Pope spoke out against this policy. It galvanized the people of this planet in a way that I don't think many issues do. The deliberate and sort of under the radar attempt at hurting children to effectuate United States immigration policy. And it was in that moment that I think something changed for President Trump, because he did sign that executive order on June 20th, 2018, saying, it wasn't moral. It wasn't on moral grounds that they backed down from this policy. It was on the fact that he said, I didn't like the sight and the feeling of the families being separated. He essentially admitted, I didn't like what this looked like on television. And it was because all of this, including that El Paso pilot program, was exposed to the world in a way they didn't intend it to be.
In 2018, ProPublica obtained audio from inside a U.S. Customs and Border Protection facility in which children are screaming for their mommies and daddies, and then you hear agents joking, "We have an orchestra here." And Lee Gellert, the lawyer with the ACLU, said that's really when people became very angry. Let's play a clip from the documentary Separated. This is Lee Gellert, the attorney with the ACLU. He was talking about the uprising that Jacob just mentioned, and he talks about what could happen if Trump reinstates family separation. You will also hear Trump in this clip.
I hope if he's elected and does family separation again, the outrage is the same. I hope that the American public has not become desensitized to it. 5 years later, we are still trying to reunite up to 1,000 children. It's not over. These children are not all back with their parents and they're suffering, but he must believe that we're past the point of the public getting outraged again because he has said, I'll do it again.
Another immigration policy you had was the zero tolerance immigration policy that separated families at the border. If you are reelected, are you ruling out instituting that?
Well, when you have that policy, people don't come. If the family hears that they're going to be separated, they love their family. They don't come. So I know it sounds harsh. We have to save our country, all right?
And that is a clip from the new documentary, Separated. We're joined by Jacob Soboroff, NBC News political and national correspondent, executive producer of the new documentary, and author of the best-selling book, Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. You know, the other thing, Jacob, is a lot of people wondered, where did this policy come from? And Jonathan White, deputy director at the Office of Refugee Resettlement, said he was told it came from Stephen Miller, who's going back to the White House with Trump, and then former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He said he was told this by federal officials.
It's right. And there's also, you know, it's amazing because just listening to that clip, Rose, I was thinking that when Errol and I decided to make this movie, Donald Trump hadn't declared that he was going to run for election again, much less win the presidency and become the president-elect. This was 4 years ago when we decided to make this film. And it's in a way, you know, whether you want to call it deja vu or being back at the place where we left off 4 years ago when we started to make this movie, so many of these names, whether it's Sessions or Miller or Tom Homan, who's such a central figure in the picture, in the movie, but not just the movie, in the incoming administration as the borders are all back. And Caitlin Dickerson, in her Pulitzer Prize-winning Atlanta cover story, said of Tom Homan, who you see throughout the film, that he was the intellectual father of the policy. And there's an amazing scene in the movie where Errol details on Valentine's Day 2017, where many of these figures all piled into a room, literally in the first, it hadn't even been a month of the administration, and, you know, hatched this plan, unveiled this plan. And it was a plan that Tom Homan and others inside the government had floated under the Obama administration and had been rejected because of the cruelty of the policy. And as I said to you earlier, from the minute that they got into office, they sort of hit the ground running. And it is it's almost extraordinary to think that the people who are responsible for it are not only coming back to government without facing any accountability, but they're in positions of increased power, increased responsibility, increased oversight over the lives of not only families, but the children within them who could be subjected to policies like this again.
Well, before we go to break, let's listen to Tom Homan on Newsmax just yesterday responding to Democrats vowing to fight Trump's mass deportation plan.
I'll tell you this, they don't have to help us, but they need to get the hell out of the way because we're coming, we're going to do it. Which means if I got to send twice as many resources to that sanctuary city, twice as many agents, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I've been saying for the last several days that they need to study the law. They cannot help, but don't impede us. And don't cross certain lines. There's a statute under Title 8 United States Code 1324 that talks about harboring and concealing an illegal alien, knowingly harboring and concealing an illegal alien from ICE. They need to read that statute and become familiar with it, because if they cross that line, there will be consequences. So, look, we're prepared to take action, but I hope they come to the table and realize we are prioritizing the worst of the worst first. Help us do that. Help yourself make your community safer. That's what you're supposed to be doing.
That's Tom Homan on Newsmax. Tom Homan is going back to the White House to be Donald Trump's border czar. We're going to take a quick break. Today, we're speaking with Jacob Soboroff about the new documentary, Separated. Separated will have its broadcast premiere on MSNBC on December 7th. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are spending the hour with Jacob Soboroff, NBC News political and national correspondent, executive producer of the new documentary Separated, and author of the New York Times bestseller Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. Jacob, again, you, Errol, and the entire team, this is such an incredible film. And it was interesting to learn that Errol Morris read your book, Separated, and he shared some of the questions that you raised in the book. What issue were you hoping to explore further with this film?
You know, Rose, I think when I covered it in real time for NBC and I ended up inside that 250,000 square foot former Walmart that was turned into essentially incarceration, you know, they called it a shelter, but these boys, 10 to 17, over 1,000 of them were just there, most of them, because they had been taken from their parents. And then when I went, you know, several days later on Father's Day 2018 to the epicenter of family separation at Ursula, the Central Processing Center, where I saw, you know, what I reported, kids locked up in cages on those linoleum floors under those Mylar blankets, you know, supervised many of them by security contractors in a watchtower after having been taken from their mothers or their fathers. The obvious question came into my mind, how could this happen in the United States of America? What am I looking at with my own eyes? And how have I been invited in as a journalist to be a part of this just extraordinarily awful story? And so I wrote the book. And, you know, that's when you and I talked for the first time. And after the book came out, Errol read it and actually put out a tweet about it. And, you know, I'm as big, if not bigger, an Errol Morris fan than anybody. And so I wanted to find a way to contact him to say thank you. And so I did. I got on the phone with him thanks to the late, great Diane Weierman, an unbelievable human being, legendary, prolific Hollywood executive and documentary producer for Participant. And Diane connected us. And Errol and I got on the phone and he told me that, you know, he wanted to make the film because he too wanted to explore deeper how something like this could happen. And I think it's part of the sort of in line with the larger body of Errol Morris's work. If you go back to The Thin Blue Line, you know, some of his earliest films, when he used narrative vignettes like he does in this film to sort of create a fictionalized narrative arc within the story to sort of see things that we never could have otherwise seen or understood, like families being separated or inside these detention centers, it adds a layer to this, an emotional truth to this that I could never have done just by the written word or by telling the story as a journalist on television. And it reminds me too of The Fog of War, how he talks to Robert McNamara about Vietnam, or when he spoke to Donald Rumsfeld about the Iraq War, when he dives deep into what happened at Abu Ghraib and standard operating procedure. These are all, as I mentioned, forensic analyses of chapters in American history. And I think when I heard, you know, nobody does it better than Errol Morris. And when I heard when I saw his tweet, when I spoke to him on the phone and he said, you know, do you want to make this into a movie? It took me less than half a second to say, you know, I'd be honored. And wow. it's been the greatest sort of professional experience of my life working with Errol, because he can get to this in a way that nobody else can.
He really, it's an amazing film, and it's so powerful because there are graphics in the film, and then there's a reenactment, mm-hmm. a mother and her son crossing the border. And that's actually pretty intense to watch, because you're just trying to imagine, it's so hard to imagine, but trying to imagine what it's like for these families. And I, when I was watching the film, Jacob, I was thinking about the numbers that, as you say now, as many as 1,360 children are still separated from their families. And if you think about how traumatic this is, but then I was thinking, let's go back to where most of these children come from, Guatemala, right. Honduras, El Salvador, and to think of this treacherous, frightening journey that kids are taking, some alone, some with parents. We've had people on over the years telling us things like they've got to avoid rattlesnakes, for example. They uh-huh. have to hope that they have water when it's really hot. We know that there's sexual abuse. And just that process alone is so traumatic. And then to think they made it to the border, and then there's that scene when the mom and the son are taken in different directions. And that one, that was just really tough to watch.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what I'm hearing you describe is something that in large part, you know, it doesn't exist in verite footage in the real world. There were no cameras that documented people taking this journey, you know, across Mexico through cartel held territory to get to the U.S. borderline, to meet a border patrol agent who they thought would be their helper to declare asylum, and who only became their worst nightmare by taking them apart from their mother or their father or their child. And what Errol has done in enlisting Eugenio Caballero, who's the production designer of our movie and was the Oscar-winning artistic director, production designer of Pan's Labyrinth, and did the film Roma and so many other extraordinary movies, mm-hmm. and working with actors like Gabriela Cartol, who plays the mother in this film. She was the star of an incredible, incredible Mexican film called The Chambermaid. Is that he creates, and what I hope one day every one of the 5,500 families will be able to do, which is tell their own story in their own way, in their own time. But Errol creates this narrative, this fictionalized journey inside of the documentary that gets to, really, it brings up the emotions that, as I said, only those families can describe, but in the absence of actual documentary footage and evidence of what it looked like, to give, I think, the most realistic look I could have possibly imagined. When I saw the film for the first time and I saw that he had rebuilt the detention centers that I had been in, rebuilt the border wall in Mexico, rebuilt the HHS shelters that these children were kept in for weeks, if not months at a time, no stone was left unturned. No detail was left ignored. It really is a masterpiece in the way that they did this.
Let's hear another clip from the documentary Separated. This is Captain Jonathan White, Deputy Director at the Office of Refugee Resettlement, asking us to imagine what these children have been through.
If you have children, you need only imagine your own child in a foreign country, not speaking the language, with no parent, with no money, not understanding how that society works, having been apprehended by federal immigration authorities. Each of these children is your child in that situation. I can never explain to someone why they should care, but I can tell you that a lot of people do care, and care profoundly. Every day there are children who enter the United States unaccompanied by a parent or legal guardian. And those children require protection and care to find a family member of theirs in the United States who can take care of them.
Family separation, though, was not about unaccompanied children. It was about accompanied children. It's about children with their families. And the unaccompanied children program, which I worked in, was essentially hijacked for a purpose for which it was never intended nor authorized in law. It was a program designed to be a child protection program for children who entered the United States without parents. And it was instead used as a tool to take children from their parents.
That is a clip from the new documentary, Separated. You can see the film when it'll have its broadcast premiere on MSNBC on December 7th. We're joined today by Jacob Soboroff, who's executive producer of the new documentary, Separated, author of the best-selling book by the same name. He's also NBC News political and national correspondent. It was also interesting to hear Jonathan White say that family separation was not about unaccompanied children. It was about accompanied children,
yes,
children with their parents. And the unaccompanied program was hijacked.
Jonathan White is the heart of this film. And he's a hero, as are so many of his colleagues in the Office of Refugee Resettlement, for what they did. And the clear-headedness with which they saw this policy coming, they warned about it to their superiors. They attempted to stop it, only then having to be tasked with the reunification of the children they tried to save in the first place. And what he said there is exactly right. This was a program designed to protect unaccompanied children coming to the United States by themselves that was hijacked by a political entity, the Trump administration, in order to, as my colleague Chris Hayes once said, render essentially accompanied children, unaccompanied, kidnap, in the words of some advocates, from their parents in order to put them inside this program so that they could send the parents back to home country without the children. The whole goal was to, you know, to terrorize, in the literal definition of the word, families around the hemisphere and politicians within the country, both to stop people from coming here and to scare Congress into enacting more restrictive immigration laws so that they could get around laws and statutes designed to protect the welfare of children in the custody of the United States government, which is still remains the goal of the incoming Trump administration today.
In the film, you talk about how the Trump administration really used journalists to expose the conditions in these detention centers to scare people from coming. Mm-hmm. You talk about how Katie Waldman, who was the press deputy secretary for Kirstjen Nielsen, she later became Katie Miller, Stephen Miller's wife. She said she invited you to interview Kirstjen Nielsen, and then she invited you to see Separation in June of 2018 in person at Casa Padre. No cameras allowed. There were just 10 reporters there. And that started 24 hours of live reports from that location. You said, I've never seen anything like that. Then you were invited again to go to Ursula, the Central Processing Center in McAllen, Texas. And that is when you saw kids locked up in cages sitting on the floor. Can you talk more about this, Jacob? So they basically thought, if we get reporters here and they broadcast these images to the world, people will be too afraid to cross the border.
Yeah, I was a tool. We were tools in what the Trump administration wanted to have happen. They wanted to broadcast the images of the cruelty. They wanted people to see what the separation policy was because they believed it would help effectuate ultimately their goals of making sure people didn't come and making sure Congress changed the laws. And what a love story, by the way, right? To meet and fall in love around implementing the family separation policy. Katie Waldman was the only reason, ultimately, that I got inside those detention centers. And she, I wrote about this in the book, she you know, developed this relationship with Stephen Miller, later became his wife. And, you know, she shared his views around the policy and did even after the policy had ended. When I would go, you know, to a meal with her as a source, I went with her and Katie Turr, another colleague of mine from MSNBC, to a dinner where, you know, she essentially continued to defend the policy and the underpinnings of it after the policy was over. And you know, I just it really does stick with me that nothing has ever happened to any of the people who are responsible for this. And I do think that one day we'll look back, and I was thinking about the other day, it took 150 years for the United States government under the Biden administration ultimately to apologize for Native American boarding schools and the family mm-hmm. separations and the anguish that happened there. Japanese American internment camps, you know, how long did it take to make those locations places on the National Register of Historic Places? The answer is too long, a generation. To apologize for slavery or Native American genocide or the sending of Jews back to the Holocaust on the St. Louis. You know, I fear that it'll take yet another generation to realize what family separations under the first Trump administration and potentially under the second actually meant in the history of our country and where they fit into the larger puzzle piece of the most ignoble things that have ever taken place in this nation. And we are on the verge of potentially something like it happening again, which is, we didn't intend for this to happen, but this film is coming out at a time where it's both a look back and a reflection on how this came to pass, but really a roadmap about what might happen in the future, not just to make people scared and feel sad and feel despondent and hopeless, but to remind people that it was the American public and people around the world who stood up and stopped the policy. And that power hasn't gone away either.
Well, to your point, no one has been held accountable. You were at the Republican National Convention. I remember watching your live report, and you talked about those mass deportation signs now. People were cheering and holding those signs. And mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the latest presidential results. Right now, Trump has 76.7 million votes. I mean, there's no way of knowing what percentage of those people support family separation, but they voted him back into the White House, knowing that he could do this again.
My belief about this is that people in whatever political party who support whatever political candidate are better than we give them credit for. And I'm not excusing anything associated with family separation policy, the racism, the bigotry, the intentional distress caused on children. But what I think sometimes is conflated here is that people fell into the trap of being scared about immigration in a political context. But most people, even people who supported President Trump in the first term, were vehemently opposed to deliberate separation of children from their parents to inflict harm on these children and their parents and their families. And, you know, I think that this country has continued to move further towards a place where we talk about migrants as points on a chart or a bar graph or a political problem that needs to be solved, rather than the humanity that we all were able to see them with in that summer of 2018. And I do have a belief, a deeply held belief, actually, that should something like this happen again, that no matter how many people voted for President-elect Trump or said that they support in national polls the idea of mass deportation, when confronted with the reality of what it really is, that mass deportation is family separation, that in 1954, Dwight D. Eisenhower implemented a mass deportation program that Donald Trump is basing his on, with a name so racist I won't say it here or anywhere, frankly, that deported 1 million Mexicans, most of them who were here legally under the Bracero program to come to work, and many Mexican Americans, and that the Trump administration is saying they want to create a deportation program orders of magnitude greater than that, that would separate incalculably more families than were separated under the family separation policy. I don't believe that the numbers reflected in those polls about support for President Trump or support for mass deportation or even the number of people that held up those signs will hold up under the weight of really the human trauma that these policies really create when presented to the American public and the global public at large.
Why don't we end, Jacob, by talking about the 1,360 children who are still separated? We're getting quite a few emails about this. People want to know, do we know where they are? Are they in foster care? Are they being taken care of? Will they ever be reconnected with their families?
Thank you for that question. And I meant to bring this up earlier. The answer is that most of those children are here in the United States with family members that are not their parents, because their parents were deported without them back to Central America. And since the Biden administration has stood up, and in fact, even before, a task force intended to reunite parents with their children that were separated under this policy, and they have indeed reunited hundreds and hundreds of parents and children under the policy, there are still many, as
civil society goes door to door. There's an organization called Justice in Motion in Central America looking for the parents. Many of the parents are very scared, according to people who talk to them or attempt to reach them, of any outreach related to the United States government, because this is the government that separated them in the first place. And so there's a chance that some of the families might be reunited, yet be unaccounted for in their reunifications, because they don't want to engage with the government, despite the fact that there are services like mental health services and other types of wraparound services available to them, legal services. And others may be so far underground, hiding from the people that are trying to find them, that there will be indeed permanent orphans, as was sort of foreshadowed and worried during the first Trump administration. We may never actually know the full number of children taken from their parents, nor the full number that have yet to be reunited, because the folks that were victims of this policy, many of them are doing everything they can to stay as far away from the U.S. government as possible.
Wow. Are you in touch with any of the children or the families that have been reunited?
Yes. Yes. In fact, sort of the most meaningful part of this film tour that we've been doing during our theatrical release, since the film came out in its world premiere at the Venice Film Festival, is that along several stops along the way, young people who were victims of the policy have joined me in different cities. So there was Eric in Philadelphia, or Kelly, who came to the Chicago premiere, or Brian, the first young person to be reunited under the Biden administration's task force, was with me in Los Angeles this past Sunday. And what I want to say about them is just the extraordinary bravery that they have to come forward and tell the stories of what they went through. And the reason that they're doing it today, some of them came here not knowing a word of English, and have graduated high school and are holding down jobs now.
It is amazing
and inspiring. And Brian specifically is now working for an organization here in Southern California, Immigrant Defenders Law Center, going to these facilities, the kinds of which he was held in order to work with young immigrant children to counsel them on what their legal options are in the face of being stuck in the U.S. immigration system. Every one of them, I hope, will one day have a story to tell, but to be blessed with their presence and the privilege of their time as we go out and share the stories of this film, because that's, you know, the film really is about the bureaucracy and how this happened. Mm-hmm. And all of the young people that went through this, I hope, will one day share their stories too. And it really has been meaningful to me to be joined along the way by some of them on the tour with this film.
Wow, incredible. And the film is still on tour. It's going to be broadcast on MSNBC on December 7th. Will it be broadcast on several days for people who would like to see it but can't see it in person?
That's correct. So we'll have our broadcast premiere Saturday, December 7th at 9 p.m. Eastern time on MSNBC. And then after that, it'll be on video on demand. You'll be able to get it if you don't DVR it that night. You'll be able to get it on demand through MSNBC for I think about a week, and then it'll be online to download in perpetuity through all the services, wherever you get your downloads, whether it's Apple or Amazon or you name it. You go out there and you'll be able to rent or buy the film online.
Great. Thank you, Jacob, because it is such an important film. Final thoughts, Jacob. I just wonder, given your history in covering all of this, you were one of 10 journalists who really exposed the living conditions of children being held in South Texas back in 2018. What are your reporting plans for Trump's second term on this issue?
I think to do the same thing that we all did, and you know, I was a very small part of this story. I mentioned Lomi Creel. There was Julia Ainsley, my colleague who was at Reuters at the time, that discovered and exposed the policy. Caitlin Dickerson, who was at the New York Times, and then wrote that Pulitzer Prize-winning cover story for The Atlantic. Ginger Thompson at ProPublica, who uncovered that audio of the families inside the detention center. Jean Guerrero down at KPBS at the time in San Diego, who discovered one of the first separated families. Ara Bogado, who reported on these issues long before the family separation policy came into the spotlight. Dr. William Lopez at the University of Michigan, who wrote a book also called Separated, about interior enforcement and removals, the type that Trump is threatening. You know, my plan is to do what they've done all along, which is to just continue to hold a mirror up, paraphrasing Walter Cronkite here, and show the American public what it is that's happening and that they're seeing in front of their own eyes. And that's all we really can do as journalists, stick to the facts on the ground.
Jacob Soboroff is NBC News political and national correspondent, executive producer of the new documentary Separated, and author of the best-selling book Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. Separated will premiere on MSNBC on December 7th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, then on video on demand, and then will be online available for download. Jacob, huge thanks for joining us. And again, to you, Errol, and the team, thank you for making this important documentary, and thanks for joining us.
What a privilege to talk to you again, Rose. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Find more information about the film at KALW.org. Click News and then Your Call. You can watch the trailer there. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.